Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 315, a half-hour segment titled "Oil on Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 6, Not So Fortunate Son." In a number of different broadcasts, oh, by the way, this is being recorded on July 22nd of the year 2001. On a number of different broadcasts, I've discussed the connection between George Bush, a fellow named James R. Bath, Arbusto Energy, which is George W. Bush's first energy company, and the family of Osama bin Laden. I've discussed this in For the Record programs numbers 182, or numbered 182, 186, 248, 256, and 277, and we're going to review some of those connections as well as some of the other material relevant to Osama bin Laden from past For the Records in just a minute. In yesterday's New York Times, yesterday being July 21st of the year 2001, there was a brief mention of a death, and that is the only mention I have seen in print so far. The death is the death of James H. Hatfield, who was the author of the unauthorized biography of George W. Bush titled Fortunate Son, George W. Bush and the Making of an American President. This book was published, and it makes allegations about George W. Bush's having been convicted of a drug violation, and then the volume was promptly recalled after it was disclosed that James H. Hatfield had lied about his own criminal past. In past discussions of this book, I've speculated about the possibility, and it is just that, that perhaps James H. Hatfield's background was known about, and that was why this information was channeled to him, was to discredit, ultimately, James H. Hatfield, and by extension, any discussion of George W. Bush and alleged drug abuse. This is the only mention I had seen in print of this particular story, and once again, this is a brief article in the National Briefing section of the New York Times from Saturday, July 21st of the year 2001. This is an AP story. It's headlined by the New York Times, "Arkansas, Author of Bush Book Dies." The author of a book that accused George W. Bush of covering up a cocaine arrest has died of a drug overdose, the police said. The author, James H. Hatfield, 43, wrote Fortunate Son, George W. Bush and the Making of an American President in 1999. Distribution of the unauthorized biography was halted after it was revealed that Mr. Hatfield had lied in interviews about his own criminal past. The police in Springdale, Arkansas, said they did not suspect foul play in the death on Wednesday. A friend heard a mention of this on CNN, and his relating of that, I did not hear this myself, was that the death was reported as an apparent suicide. Well, whether it was suicide, whether it was a, quote, overdose of a street drug, I cannot say, obviously, precisely how James H. Hatfield died, but I should emphasize that I am very suspicious about the circumstances surrounding his death. Whatever the truth concerning the allegations of drug abuse and a possible arrest of George W. Bush in the past, this unauthorized biography, Fortunate Son, George W. Bush and the Making of an American President, was more than a little important because it mentioned an apparent connection between the milieu of Osama bin Laden and George W. Bush. It's actually a hard connection between the family of Osama bin Laden and George W. Bush, whether or not, as is speculated, the family of Osama bin Laden actually put up a portion of the working capital that went to found Arbusto Energy. Certainly, an individual who allegedly did put up that capital was the Texas business representative for the bin Laden family. What we're going to do next is to listen to an excerpt concerning Fortunate Son and also a book about the BCCI called The Outlaw Bank. This is from For the Record program number 277, and as noted, the Bush-Bin Laden-James R. Bath connection is mentioned in For the Records 182, 186, 248, and 256, in addition to For the Record program number 277, which you're about to hear excerpted. We listen to the following from For the Record program number 186. Review some of the aspects of the George Bush bin Laden connection and add some supplemental material. We're going to take a look at a suppressed biography of George Bush. This is entitled Fortunate Son, subtitled George W. Bush and the Making of an American President. This was authored by J.H. Hatfield, published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press, copyright 1999.
Actually, it was copyright 2000 by Omega Publishing, although it came out in 1999. And this book was suppressed and recalled after it came out that J.H. Hatfield had a criminal record. Of the connection between the Bin Laden family and George W. Bush through his Arbusto Energy Company, we read as follows in Fortunate Son. Speaking of Bush, J.H. Hatfield writes, in June 1977, he formed his own drilling company, Arbusto Energy. Arbusto means Bush in Spanish. Like his father, who made his fortune in the oil business with the money of others, George W. founded Arbusto with the financial backing of investors including James R. Baff, a Houston businessman whom Bush apparently first met when they were in the same Texas Air National Guard unit. Tax documents and personal financial records show that Baff, an aircraft broker with business ties to Saudi Arabian sheiks, had invested $50,000 in Arbusto, granting him a 5% interest in two limited partnerships controlled by Bush. In one of the most bizarre footnotes to history, Time magazine described Baff in 1991 as, quote, a deal broker whose alleged associations run from the CIA to a major shareholder and director of the Bank of Credit and Commerce, unquote. BCCI, as it was more commonly known, was closed down in July of 1991 amid charges of multi-billion dollar fraud and worldwide news reports that the institution had been involved in covert intelligence work, drug money laundering, arms brokering, bribery of government officials, and aid to terrorists. An accounting commission by the Bank of England finally exposed the extent of BCCI's deficits and criminal offenses, forcing the bank's eventual collapse. Baff was never directly implicated in the BCCI scandal, but according to the Outlaw Bank, an award-winning 1993 book by Time correspondents Jonathan Beatty and S.C. Gwynn, Baff originally, quote, made his fortune by investing money for Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz and another BCCI-connected Saudi, Sheikh bin Laden, unquote. Allegedly the father of none other than Osama bin Laden, the man accused by the U.S. government of masterminding the August 1998 terrorist bombings of the American embassy in Kenya and Tanzania, which killed more than 250 people. According to news reports, in a 1976 trust agreement drawn shortly after Bush's father was appointed director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Saudi Sheikh Salim M. bin Laden appointed Baff as his business representative in Texas. Bin Laden, along with his brothers, owned Bin Laden Brothers Construction, one of the largest construction companies in the Middle East. In a 1991 deposition, Baff testified he was the sole director of Skyway Aircraft Leasing Limited, a Houston company owned by Khaled bin Mahfouz. Bin Mahfouz had been a major shareholder in BCCI, which had been accused of using Mideast oil money to seek ties to political leaders in other countries throughout the 1970s and 1980s. By the way, I would note that Oliver North used BCCI for many of his Iran-Contra machinations. Time reporters Beatty and Gwynn suggest in their book that the $50,000 Baff invested in George W.'s Arbusto Energy Drilling Company may have belonged to Baff's Saudi clients, since the Houston businessman, quote, had no substantial money of his own at the time, unquote. Ironically, the money used to underwrite the first business venture of a possible future president of the United States may have been derived, at least in part, from the family fortune of Saudi terrorist Osama bin Laden. According to court documents, Baff also swore that in 1977 he represented four prominent and wealthy Saudi Arabians as a trustee and used his name on their investments in the United States. In return, he received a 5% interest in their deals. Federal authorities, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and the FBI later investigated Baff after allegations were made by one of his American business partners that the Saudis were using Baff and their enormous financial sources to influence U.S. policy. And skipping down, in 1990, in an attempt to distance himself and his presidential father from the growing BCCI scandal, George W. stated in an interview that neither he nor the elder Bush had ever conducted business with James Baff. Junior went on record at the time as saying that he met the Houston businessman in 1970 when both were fighter pilots at the Air National Guard base at Ellington. President Bush, quote, knows Baff the way he knows thousands of people, unquote, his son told the press, and the two men could not be considered good friends. Quote, I've never done business with him, Baff, and I know the president hasn't either, unquote. Well, at least in the case of George W., he was lying. He obviously had been doing business with him. He was a Bath owned 5% in two limited partnerships controlled by Bush. Note again that, as written here by J.H. Hadfield, Saudi Sheikh Salim M. bin Laden appointed Bath as his business representative in Texas. So Bath was Sheikh bin Laden's business representative in Texas, that the father of Osama bin Laden. More about George W.'s denial of knowing Bath, and again, that was obviously a lie. A few months later, however, the release of tax documents and personal financial records forced George W. to admit that Bath had indeed been one of Arbusto Energy's original investors. Bush said that to his knowledge, Bath's investment was from personal funds, and no available evidence existed to determine that the money came from Saudi interests. Numerous questions remain unanswered as to Bath's motives behind his investment in George W.'s first business venture. And in a footnote, U.S. intelligence agencies were concerned that bin Laden might attempt to assassinate George W. or the former president when both men toured the Middle East and met with Arab and Jewish leaders in November of 1998, only 4 months after the embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania. And bear in mind that when Bush invested, when Bath rather invested $50,000 in Arbusto Energy, as written here and reported by Time magazine reporters Beatty and Gwynn, Time, a very conservative publication, by the way, the Houston businessman, quote, had no substantial money of his own at the time. And as noted by Hadfield, ironically, the money used to underwrite the first business venture of a possible future president of the United States may have been derived at least in part from the family fortune of Saudi terrorist Osama bin Laden. More about the Bath-Bin Laden-Bush connection from a book which was cited in that J.H. Hadfield book, Fortunate Son, a suppressed biography. This is about BCCI. It's called The Outlaw Bank, subtitled A Wild Ride into the Secret Heart of BCCI. This is co-authored by Jonathan Beatty, B-E-A-T-Y, and S.C. Gwynn, G-W-Y-N-N-E. It's copyright 1993 by Ramjack Incorporated, and this was published in the United States by Random House. And the White referred to here is a Bill White, who was a business partner of James R. Bath, and later found himself at loggerheads with James, with Mr. Bath. Quote, and this is Bill White talking here about his former business partner and eventual enemy. You have to understand that I thought, beginning again, you have to understand that they thought I was one of them, unquote, White said earnestly. Again, quoting, Bath told me that he was in the CIA. He told me he had been recruited by George Bush himself in 1976 when Bush was director of the agency. That made sense to me, especially in light of what I had seen once we went into business together. Bath and George Jr. were pals and flew together in the same Air National Guard unit, and Bath lived just down the street from the Bush family when George Sr. was living in Houston. He said Bush wanted him involved with the Arabs and to get into the aviation business, unquote. White began pulling documents out of his cases as he talked, quote, that's how Bath, who didn't know anything about the aviation business, became one of the biggest jet aviation dealers in the country within a couple of years. Look, here's a Boeing he's leasing to the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. That's a multi-million dollar jet. And that's how he became a representative for Sheikh Khalid bin Mahfouz, whose family controls the National Commercial Bank of Saudi Arabia. And I would note that's also how he came to be the Texas business representative for Sheikh bin Laden, the father of Osama bin Laden.
That again from For the Record program number 277, which in turn accessed an excerpt from For the Record program number 186. In For the Record program number 308, we dealt with a perhaps not so astonishing move by the Bush administration, one of its earlier actions. Osama bin Laden, whose family may very well have put up a portion of the investment capital that went to found George Bush's first oil company, Osama bin Laden has been sheltered by the ultra-reactionary Islamic government of the Taliban in Afghanistan. And perhaps not so surprisingly, one of the things the Bush administration did was to channel $43 million to the Taliban. This was ostensibly to reward the Taliban for cracking down on opium trafficking. One of the questions that I have concerning this is whether perhaps, and this is obviously speculative, perhaps this was something of a reward for the Taliban for sheltering Osama bin Laden, whose acts of terrorism have been particularly damaging to the Democrats in the United States. Bin Laden's attacks on embassies in 1998 put added pressure on Bill Clinton and discredited him on the left when he responded to those right at the time that the impeachment proceedings were gathering steam. And Osama bin Laden's forces have also been alleged to have been behind the attack on some U.S. Army Rangers in Somalia in 1993. That put the Clinton administration in early hot water with the Pentagon and with the elements in this country right of center. I would also note that during the 2000 campaign, the Democrats were made to look weak on national security issues when the destroyer USS Cole was bombed with the loss of the lives of 17 American sailors. So in that context, I think the rewarding of the Taliban to the tune of $43 million at the time when they are sheltering Osama bin Laden raises more questions than it answered. Revisiting a bit of text that I dealt with originally in For the Record program number 308, miscellaneous articles and updates. This is from the Los Angeles Times of Tuesday, May 22nd of the year 2001. This is a column by Robert Shear, the syndicated columnist for the LA Times, who's been doing some very good work. It's headlined by the LA Times, Bush's Faustian Deal with the Taliban. It reads in part as follows, skipping down. Speaking of the $43 million, that's the message sent with the recent gift of $43 million to the Taliban rulers of Afghanistan, the most virulent anti-American violators of human rights in the world today. The gift, announced last Thursday by Secretary of State Colin Powell, in addition to other recent aid, makes the U.S. the main sponsor of the Taliban and rewards that rogue regime, unquote, for declaring that opium growing is against the will of God. So, too, by the Taliban's estimation, are most human activities, but it's the ban on drugs that catches this administration's attention. Never mind that Osama bin Laden still operates the leading anti-American terror operation from his base in Afghanistan, from which, among other crimes, he launched two bloody attacks on American embassies in Africa in 1998. Sadly, the Bush administration is cozying up to the Taliban regime at a time when the United Nations, at U.S. insistence, imposes sanctions on Afghanistan because the Kabul government will not turn over bin Laden. And again, during the 2000 campaign, Osama bin Laden's forces successfully attacked the destroyer USS Cole with the loss of the lives of 17 American sailors. And again, one of the questions I have concerns the possibility that perhaps the Taliban were being rewarded for continuing to shelter Osama bin Laden, who has proved quite useful to the Republicans. In For the Record program number 292, we dealt with an interesting bit of background concerning Osama bin Laden. In the original J.H. Hatfield text, it was speculated about the identity of the Sheikh bin Laden, who was represented by James R. Bath, and it was speculated that perhaps that was Osama bin Laden's father. It turns out that must have been a different member of the bin Laden family, a different Sheikh bin Laden, because bin Laden's father was killed in a plane crash in 1967. I would note, however, that the bin Laden family is very, very large, that Mohammed bin Laden, the patriarch of the family, was very, very prolific. And beyond that, I would note that bin Laden's father, Mohammed Awad bin Laden, was very close to the founder of Saudi Arabia and the first monarch of that country, Abdul Aziz ibn Saud. And we're going to review some information that was covered in For the Record program number 292. In that broadcast, we dealt with an article from the Financial Times from the weekend of April 14th and April 15th of the year 2001. This is an article by Robin Allen and Carola Hoyos, H-O-Y-O-S. It's headlined, Millionaire Terrorist Fugitive, and it talks about Osama bin Laden, and in describing the genesis of the bin Laden family, the authors write as follows. Bin Laden's father, Mohammed Awad bin Laden, emigrated from southern Yemen's Hadramawt Valley in the 1920s to Saudi Arabia, where he became a close friend of the country's founder and first monarch Abdulaziz ibn Saud, whose example he followed by taking almost as many wives as the king. Like the king, Muhammad's many children consolidated his strategic alliances through extended families. Osama bin Laden would later take a page out of that same book by marrying one of his daughters to the Taliban leader, Mullah Muhammad Omar. Thanks in part to Muhammad's relationship with the king, the family construction company prospered. The group, the Bin Laden Organization, which was founded in 1935 and became synonymous with Saudi Arabia's oil-fed development, has an annual turnover of billions of dollars and employs 35,000 people with offices throughout the world, including the Americas. And I would remind listeners parenthetically that the Texas business representative for the Bin Laden family was the aforementioned James R. Bath. Continuing. Its first headline-grabbing success came in 1961, 6 years before Mohammed bin Laden died in a light aircraft accident in the U.S. when it built the Mecca Taif Mountain Road in Saudi Arabia's western province. Again, note that bin Laden's father died in 1967, so the member of the bin Laden family that was alluded to as being tied to James R. Bath, a business representative in Texas for the bin Laden family, was undoubtedly one of Osama's brothers. More about bin Laden from this same Financial Times article. One of bin Laden's earliest actions was arguably one of his most successful. U.S. prosecutors claim that Al-Qaeda, the base, the network he co-founded in Afghanistan, allegedly to carry out terrorist attacks, trained those who ambushed and killed 18 U.S. servicemen stationed in Somalia in 1993. And again, we've dealt with the... We first accessed this story in For the Record program number 292. In connection with the association, and it was a very, very close one, between Mohammed bin Laden, Osama bin Laden's father, and King Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, the founder of Saudi Arabia, we also excerpted a text that I used many times on this program. That book is called The Secret War Against the Jews, co-authored by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, published in hardcover and softcover by the St. Martin's Press, copyright 1994. And in For the Record program number 292 and in The Secret War Against the Jews, the relationship between King Ibn Saud, a British fascist named St. John, nicknamed Jack Philby, and Alan Dulles and the Third Reich was detailed, and we're going to touch on that relationship here. I would note in that context that Alan Dulles was also very, very close to the Bush family and helped to engage in some of the corporate camouflaging of some of the Bush companies that were allied with the Third Reich and were confiscated by the alien property custodian in World War II as being Nazi front companies. We've dealt with that connection in many broadcasts. In The Secret War Against the Jews, the authors write, Jack Philby has become an obscure footnote to the history of the Cold War, but his legacy was far from minor. He is one of the lesser known but most influential persons in the modern history of the Middle East, the renegade British intelligence agent who plucked an obscure terrorist out of the desert and helped to make him the king of Saudi Arabia. King Ibn Saud was very much his creation. Philby stole the information from British intelligence files that engineered Saudi control over the holiest shrines of the Muslim world. Jack Philby and Ibn Saud betrayed the British Empire and made the American oil companies economic masters of the region. The man who helped them to do it was Alan Dulles, an American spy who had befriended Philby while he was coordinating American intelligence gathering in the Middle East in the first half of the 1920s. Between them, these three men built the very foundations of the modern Middle East. They were the architects of the oil weapon, the instigators of war, the manipulators of history. More important, Philby's and Ibn Saud's political and philosophical allegiance was to Nazi Germany, while much of Dulles' profits came from the same source. And I'd add the same could be said of the Bush family. Noting that connection and noting some of the intergenerational networking, in For the Record program number 284, we noted that under the auspices of the very prestigious investment firm, the Carlyle Group, the elder George Bush, the heir to his pro-Nazi ancestors, the elder George Bush was in close communication with the Saudi royal family during the 2000 campaign. This was from the New York Times of Monday, March 5th of the year 2001, an article by Leslie Wayne, Dateline Washington, and headlined, Elder Bush in Big GOP Cast Toiling for Top Equity Firm. It reads in part as follows. During the presidential campaign last year, former President George Bush took time off from his son's race to call on Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia at a luxurious desert compound outside Riyadh to talk about American-Saudi business affairs. Skipping down, traveling with the fanfare of dignitaries, Mr. Bush and Mr. Baker were using their extensive government contacts to further their business interests as representatives of the Carlyle Group. And in For the Record program number 284, I speculated that perhaps the connections between oil man Bush and Crown Prince Fahd or Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia might actually have had more to do with keeping the price of crude oil high, and that high price of crude oil and the resulting stress that that placed on international capital markets had much to do with torpedoing the speculative investment bubble in the United States, and many analysts credit that with assuring George Bush's victory in the 2000 election, even though he lost. I would also note that the elder George Bush has continued to sort of pinch hit for his son with the Saudi royal family. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, July 15th of the year 2001. Our article by Jane Perlez of the New York Times at Stateline Washington headlined, Bush's father contacts Saudis on son's behalf, and it reads in part as follows. For the second time in the past few months, former President George W. Bush has intervened in a critical foreign policy area, calling Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia to reassure him that President Bush's heart is in the right place, unquote, when it comes to the Middle East, a senior administration official and a diplomat from the region both said. The former president telephoned the Crown Prince, who had complained that the current Bush administration is too close to Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, before Secretary of State Colin Powell was dispatched to the Middle East by the White House in late June. The point of the call was to vouch for his son and to assuage concerns of the Crown Prince, the day-to-day ruler of Saudi Arabia, that some strains in the United States relations with Saudi Arabia over the Israeli-Palestinian conflict do not represent a permanent breach. Former President Bush also urged Abdullah to visit the United States. Skipping down, according to one of the accounts, President Bush was in the room when his father made the call. So the elder George Bush, maintaining close contacts with the Saudi royal family. Recall in For the Record program number 214, among other broadcasts, we dealt with the oil price increase in 1979 and 80, which helped to doom Jimmy Carter's presidency, along with the Iranian hostage crisis. And we took a look at the fact that George Bush's CIA had submitted a report on the world petroleum industry, which falsely forecast an oil shortage, and that in many ways set the stage for the phony gas crisis and the rise in petroleum prices that helped to doom Jimmy Carter's presidency by engendering economic stress at that point in time as well. So again, the waters around the Bush family are both oiled and troubled, hence the subtitle of this broadcast, Trouble on Oiled Waters, Part 6. And as for the late, not-so-fortunate son, James H. Hatfield, well, rest in peace. The various broadcasts I've alluded to are carried by a tape duplication and CD duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. There's a list of and description of the various programs available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey is compiling the For the Record programs on real audio files. More recent For the Record programs are streaming on one of the WFMU websites. That is www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. One word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. And those broadcasts are streaming. Older For the Record programs are available on real audio file for downloading only on http://archive.wfmu.org/archive/capital D capital X, /. Listeners can email me at demory@kfjc.org and listen to the 3-hour program I do on Sunday nights at kfjc.org from 7 to 10 Pacific time on Sunday. That concludes For the Record program number 315, Trouble on Oil Waters Part 6, Not So Fortunate Son, being recorded on July 22nd of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.